These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you've got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand. Steve will be back tomorrow, 12:10 on this Tuesday afternoon. A sunny one here in Chicago. I was just watching him about 2 minutes ago on CNBC Live, and he joins us now. John and Jerry, I always wonder, are you just like behind the set there? Are you like cowering in the hallway? What are you doing?
Well, I just came off the set, and I'm just taking off my makeup. That's what I'm doing, John.
Yeah, you don't need that for radio, certainly. Okay, let's. I want to talk about Peloton to start, only because, you know, they report big revenue earnings before the opening bell. Their net losses have been narrowed. They're up 7% in pre-trading. You got the CEO, John Foley, live on TV as his stock is falling. He has no explanation for it. What must that be like for a CEO when he's watching this happen? He can't figure out why, live on TV.
Well, and I think the real issue is that a lot of these companies, Peloton, Lyft, Uber, have been more or less tarred with the same brush. And that is, John, that it's okay to grow, as Amazon did, without making a profit, but by having enough cash flow that you don't need to keep coming to the market to basically feed that beast. And in the case of Peloton, where they claim they're a technology company, they're an apparel company, they're basically a workout company and so forth, they don't want to be basically pigeonholed into a space that people can apply a certain multiple. So that instead, they said, we're all these different things. Well, the market is saying, no matter what you are, you're spending too much money for growth, and we don't like it. And that's when the market turned those 12%, like you say, from a 7% rally to a 5% sell-off.
Yeah, and the recent number shows them still down about 5.25%. Switching, you mentioned Uber there. I think you did, or at least you mentioned Lyft. But Uber, you know, comes out yesterday promising these attractive profits, and all of a sudden we see it plummet today. What's going on there?
Well, they had earnings that were once again not up to snuff. It's costing them an awful lot of money to compete, and they're losing money on virtually every segment of their business, including Uber Eats. So there's a lot of stocks that people like, John, and they use the services all the time. Uber would be an example. Lyft would be an example. Peloton's probably an example. But they might not be good investments, and that's what my point would be, is that many of these are just not good investments at these levels. I mean, for instance, when Uber was 4 years ago, they talked about perhaps coming out as a publicly traded entity. It had a $12 billion valuation then. Now it's got a $48 billion valuation, and that's after its valuation has been cut in half. So, you know, there's a lot of issues with these stocks, and people were paying anything for growth just a couple years ago. Now it's kind of the show me time for a lot of these companies.
Yeah.
And a lot of them aren't showing what people want.
Yeah, and I get that because, look, I look at Uber and I use it, not every day, but at least once a week. A lot of my friends do it. So many people do. But just because it's something that's widely used and it's the new thing that's really taking over, like you're saying, your ROI, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's really going to pay off too much in the short term or in the long term.
Exactly. And, you know, Peter Lynch was famous for saying, what are you buying? What are you eating as far as cereals and things like that? Well, buy those stocks, because if you're buying them and people are like you and they're buying those, then maybe that's the area of the market you should focus on. The markets aren't like that anymore because stocks aren't like what they were like when Peter Lynch said that. Now stocks are priced in some cases. You get multi-billion dollar valuations for stocks that will not make money for years. And that's under the best case scenario. And many of these stocks, John, quite frankly, have massive amounts of competition. Uber and Lyft, those are just the two most notable names in the ride-sharing space. But there are seven other ride-sharing apps out there in various cities, and Uber has to compete against those.
Yeah.
And they constantly are paying drivers to work for them, and by giving them incentives like, we'll pay you an extra $500 a month if you do X amount of pickups and so forth. That's all a burn rate. That's trying to basically survive and knock the competitor out so you can jack up your rates later. It's not what investors want to hear right now.
Other ones I've been watching, Shake Shack, boy, diving 20% at least earlier on in the day with their stocks earlier today. You know, it's funny with Shake Shack, they opened up one near my place and I couldn't wait to go, and I tried it for not the first time, I had had it before, but it was this big like moment where we're like, all right, we're all going to go to Shake Shack. And we went once and it was fine. It's good food, maybe a little overpriced, but you know, it's been there a year. I haven't gone back since. I don't know if you can relate to the same thing, obviously, my experience to what's happening on the market, but I imagine a lot of these things seem so sexy at first, but then when it comes down to the brass tacks of it, it can lead to, you know, you're not going to get much out of it.
That's exactly right. And there are a lot of situations like that, Shake Shack being a prime example. That is one, however, that does make money. But okay. The question is, if they're going to open 45 new locations next year, 2020, that's a fairly expensive proposition. And things like the $15 minimum wage that kicked in New York City, and wages going up around the country, these are costs that places like McDonald's that are serving tens of thousands of burgers per location per day, a place like Shake Shack is doing a much smaller number. So their profit margin has to be much greater if they can get the people to make all those burgers at a profitable level, then they're going to be somebody who survives. If they can't, then it's going to be just another, you know, flash in the pan that goes away.
Right. I'm also watching WWE jumping more than 5 or 6%, I think up to 7% at one point in trading so far today. I didn't even know they partnered with Saudi General Entertainment Authority. I guess it doesn't come as much of a surprise. I guess they're going to add another event, and that's got people excited about WWE wrestling. I don't know if you're much of a wrestler, John.
Well, I'm a big fan of the stock and of Vince McMahon and The Rock and a whole bunch of their stars. But I think the issue here was also that the shares had just tumbled, falling out of bed because of a cutoff because of a lack of deal with that same Saudi company. It was feared that they would not be able to distribute in Saudi Arabia. And that was going to be a big problem because it was expected to be a growth area, and that's why they had just gone over for a big event. So the fact that they've done the deal finally means that it can go back to a little more normal trading range for that particular stock.
Yeah, it's trading up 6 3/4. All right, John, anything else you're watching here today?
Wright Medical, WMGI, Wright Medical. They're supposed to be acquired by Stryker Corp, a Midwestern company, but it looks like somebody might be making a run at them, and or they may have to sweeten the bid a little bit. So we added 2 shares of Wright Medical Group, WMGI, today.
All right. John Najarian, contributor at CNBC, co-founder of Najarian Family Office. He's got the makeup off already. Done with radio, too. John, thanks for chatting with us today.
Thank you, sir. Have a great one.
And how convenient, we're going to talk to the folks at the Salvation Army after the 12:30 news. Not as many people carry change around. I know I don't as much as I used to, but there's a way to donate even with your phone and the red kettle, so you still kind of get that satisfying clink-clang noise. I don't know if they're going to add something in there, but you'll be able to donate still as you pass them by in the street. That's coming up after the news, but right now we got Kelly Leonard, host of Getting to Yes, and of course, the great Second City citizen. Kelly, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
So this week, your guest, a fascinating woman, a journalist,
yes.
Someone who is very well-spoken, has interesting relations not only with who she's married to, but also her father. She must have been a fascinating guest.
Yeah, Alicia Menendez, who for years co-hosted I'm on a Poor and Company for PBS, but now just moved over to MSNBC as an anchor. And she has a new book called The Likeability Trap, which is actually what I was surprised by. This thing is so well researched, is academic evidence around how women show up in the workplace. And essentially, what she shows is that the more women succeed, the less likable they become.
And is it because of how, I don't know even how to ask this question, is it more that women often feel the pressure to be warm and inviting because that's what they've been taught through years and years of, you know, men running the show, that they don't want to step on anyone's toes and then they maybe aren't as successful? Or is it that if they are too strong, they come across as the word I can't say? It's a really interesting discussion about why we see women bosses in certain ways and why we don't.
Yeah, so the evidence that we see, or that she uncovers, is that we want our leaders to be both warm and strong. That's how we want our male leaders to be. The thing that happens with women is that the most capable women, when they succeed, if they're perceived as warm, they're then perceived as less strong. And then the vice versa. If they're perceived as strong, then they're less warm. So it's a double bind.
I think the onus has got to be on not only, it shouldn't necessarily be on the women to define, you know, the kind of roles that they're going to play, but also on the employees to, you know, and I found myself doing this the same thing. Just, you know, if you ever have a female boss and you feel like she's being too strong, and I almost say, well, would I be feeling this exact same way if it was a male leader on the other side? And I feel like that is our onus to, as men, to check ourselves a little bit there.
Absolutely. And this ties back to earlier podcast interviews we've done with other folks who have talked about our model of leadership ain't great. I mean, we look for this. We want all these like really confident people. And it's like, I don't care about your confidence if you're not competent. And she talks about this need where, I'll just quote her from the book. She said, creating a culture where women are seen by others as leaders, see themselves as leaders, and are given opportunities to lead just as they are. So that's ambitious, complicated, nice, aggressive, bossy, effective leaders, which is basically how we let men lead. We just don't let women do it.
Obviously, women have been leading companies and parts of companies for many, many years. This isn't a new thing. But, of course, the numbers of them leading in boardrooms hopefully going up, and hopefully in any company as well. Is this a matter that this is kind of a transition period where people just got to get used to it and it's just going to take some time? Or is this something that can actively be changed by people changing their behaviors and their attitudes towards their female leaders?
I think that last point is it. And I think she sees an opportunity for change. And she basically has, you know, she used to think that, you know, maybe just leave it, you know, and it'll figure out herself. But that's not the case. Really, we do need to do better by ourselves and ask for more from others. So I think it's a matter of all of it happening to make the movement work. But it's not something that's going to happen overnight, that's for sure.
You didn't get into too much New Jersey politics with her, did you?
I did. This is interesting, though, because I talked to her about, you know, her famous dad, who's a senator from New Jersey, and he's gotten into some trouble.
Yeah.
But he seems to be out of that right now, for the most part.
He just won re-election, so there you go.
Yeah. But I talked to her. I said, you know, I had a dad who was sort of locally famous, and I know how that played out.
Uh-huh.
And she said something interesting, because she was like, oh, by the way, my dad's fame as a senator is not really affected me, but when he was mayor of the small town we lived in, that totally affected me. So it was actually, she sort of felt that sort of more small town fame was more affecting to her, and getting like bugged at restaurants and people calling the house. And so it was actually the mayor job that affected her more than the senator job.
Well, Kelly, your dad was basically the mayor too, in many ways.
He was kind of the mayor of entertainment in Chicago, sure.
Yeah, there you go. Kelly, so great to chat with you. And again, where can people find that podcast?
They can find it at WGNplus.com, WGNradio.com, and then also SecondCityWorks.com.
Sorry I made you make the plug there, Kelly. Good to chat with
you,
okay?
Take care, man.
Thank you very much, Jen. 12:37 here on this Tuesday afternoon. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand. All right, the Salvation Army working for us 24/7, 365. But everyone knows the holiday seasons when you start to see those red kettles coming out. I'm sure excited about that is Mr. Scott Justvig from the Salvation Army, Executive Director of Development and Community Relations. You got a long title, Scott. How you doing here today?
John, I got to tell you, it's been a great day. We're getting ready for the upcoming weekend with kettles coming out and a brand new feature for kettles this year.
Yeah, this is really cool because, look, I love nothing I love than emptying my pockets, especially a change, a loose dollar here and there. When you see the red kettle, it goes to such a great cause. But, boy, it seems like less and less I have those coins. I don't get them as much, or I use my credit card all the time. And I imagine that's a common problem, but you guys have this great way that someone can still kind of have that tangible interaction with the kettle, but just using their phones.
I have to tell you, this is really, really fun, and we've been working on this and trying different tactics on this for a couple of years now. And we feel pretty good about this year's test and rollout for using Apple Pay and Google Pay, so that when you walk by one of the kettles, if you don't have change in your pocket, no big deal. If you've got your phone and it's got Apple Pay on it or Google Pay on it, all you have to do is tap the phone on a little sticker where it says tap to pay, and I'm telling you, you can make a contribution right from your phone, right to the kettle.
Does it set how much automatically, or do you have to enter it on your phone, or does it take like a dollar out? How does that work?
It allows a donor to make whatever decision they want. So it comes up with three preset options, and then a fourth option is to put in whatever amount you want to. So if there's someone that wants to put in $1,000, we'd be more than happy to take that at the kettle,
yeah,
that contribution.
There you go. Come on, people. You heard the man. So I imagine what was really cool about this, and I got to say, I went out and did some bell ringing with the Salvation Army. I know WGN does a lot every year and tries to help out. We did it on the jam on our the morning show I work for on CW26. Oh, boy, it was the coldest morning we could have picked, but people were eager to give back. But so many people did say, oh, I'll go make a donation online. I can't do it right now. And I think that people are well-intentioned when they do it, but there's something about being able to do it right then and there. You remember that you're doing it. You made that donation. There's that positive feedback. Sometimes that translation of, oh, I'm going to donate online later, doesn't actually happen.
Well, hopefully this will be really, really easy to do. In fact, you know, I'm one of those guys that has an older iPhone. I don't have one of the newer models. And so for me, the tap to donate isn't going to work. But I can just point my camera at the little QR code right next to the tap sign, and it'll take me right to that same donations page on my old iPhone.
You're going to have some IT guys by the kettles here helping people out. I imagine you got to brief everyone who's ringing the bells on how to handle this sort of stuff.
Well, we wanted to make it as simple as possible because we know that our bell ringers are volunteers, and they're certainly not IT experts by any stretch of the imagination. So it's as easy as just pointing your iPhone at it and clicking the button and picking your donation.
So for people that don't know what you guys do and where that donation money goes, enlighten us.
Oh, I have to tell you, the best thing about Salvation Army is that for well over 150 years, we've been meeting the need at the point of need in 132 countries around the world. But right now, during the Christmas campaign, Salvation Army in Chicago, we will raise about 70% of our operating budget between October 1 and January 31 during this Christmas time period. It's really important, whether it's taking care of homeless families at the Shield of Hope Center, working at our Harbor Light Center for chemical and alcohol dependency treatment, whether it's one of our Inglewood Core Community Center, where we've got an after-school program, we've got a Fatherhood and Actions program, whether it's music instruction out in Norwich, where we're teaching kids how to play instruments because they're not getting music instruction anymore. So we're trying to fill in wherever we need, where we see a need.
I imagine people have passed the red kettle so many times. Where's the best place to spot them? And they start on Friday, right?
They do. And I got to tell you, you know, Jewel supermarkets, they have us right outside, typically outside of both doors.
Yeah.
But you'll find us downtown, throughout downtown Chicago. I have to tell you, I've walked down Michigan Avenue near the Neiman Marcus, and the bell ringer at that Neiman Marcus, whoever we get there, seems to be the most friendly bell ringer I've ever seen, ever.
Uh-huh. That or they're just getting a roll of quarters on their own. They want to make sure that they top out. Is there a little friendly competition between the volunteers?
Oh, heavens yes. Are you kidding? In fact, because some of the people that ring the bells for us, they're compensated. They're paid because they're folks that maybe need a job.
Amen.
And this is a good way to give them a paycheck, not just a handout.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they get a reference from an employer so that when they go after Christmas to look for a full-time job, they've got a reference now. And it's a great ministry for us, a great part of our mission. So in the van, when those bell ringers are going back to the Salvation Army, they're all talking in the van about, hey, I think I got a 20 in my kettle today. It's just great fun. And then the next day, after we've counted the money and put it in the bank, you know, there's just a really friendly competition between those bell ringers.
Absolutely. And I think it's just a great thing to remember. And you mentioned some of those programs that, look, you know, we make donations all the time, and what a great thing we do. And I think as Americans that are on the holiday spirit, we try and give back where we're able to. So many programs you give to, they're national programs and they're well-meaning. They do great stuff as well. The Salvation Army, of course, is all over the country. But as you mentioned, I mean, this money that you're donating is getting spent somewhere here in the community.
Hey, the really cool thing about this, John, is that let's say that you're out in Naperville and you go by the Jewel in Naperville on a Friday afternoon and you put money in the kettle, okay? On Saturday, that money gets counted. It gets taken in a night deposit. On Monday, it gets deposited in the bank. And on Monday afternoon, it can go to work for someone here in the Chicago area.
That's
in Naperville.
That's incredible stuff. All right, starts November 8th. Remind people again the who, what, where, when, how.
Oh, I'm telling you, from November 8th, every Monday through Saturday at most retail locations, we've got 1,141 kettle locations out there. You got to be able to find one somewhere. And it runs all the way through December 24th.
And if you got your phone, that'll help out too. The new iPhone X or new 11 models and the iPhone X as well and some other things too. And either way, just carry a little extra change in your pockets here during the holiday spirit season. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks, John. I've had a great time. Hopefully this will inspire people to get involved.
Amen to that. All right, here's we'll have a quick break, but first, the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. And just when we thought striking season was over, another one gets squeezed in. First, it was the University of Chicago nurses. Then it was the CTU teachers. And now, the Mount Sinai hospital workers plan on striking next Monday, November the 11th. These aren't just nurses going on strike, but also housekeepers, transportation workers, nursing assistants, and others. Negotiations for the workers' union has been underway for a while, but like many times before, negotiations have stalled. And employees have technically been working without a contract since June, so this is clearly their breaking point. And you gotta ask yourself, have we hit the breaking point with fake meat? Yeah, that's still around. And Giordano's is jumping on it with a new Impossible Meat Pizza. The 70 pizza locations will be rolling out the new ingredient option for sausage pizza lovers or plant lovers. And it's available today. So if that pizza craving or meat alternative craving hits you, it might just be the best option for you today. Let's be real. When a new pizza topping gets introduced to one of the pizza capitals of the country, you know people are taking it seriously. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
720 WGN, Miss Amy Guth joining us, host of the Crane's Daily Gist. How you doing, Amy?
Hello.
How's life?
Oh, good.
Yeah, not so good for Boeing's white-collar executives and management team.
Well, at some point when we're talking about compensation, you're like, someone might be down $10 million. Well, I'm not relating to you. So that's the story, is that the chief executive officer, Dennis Muilenburg, will waive his 2019 bonus, and he will decline equity grants for at least a year until that 737 MAX is back up in the air reliably.
Okay.
Which, you know, I think that's a reasonable deal. When he was testifying last week, there were calls for his resignation. People were booing him. I mean, people were really reacting very strongly to him being there. So I think that's probably a reasonable concession. The chairman of Boeing came out and said he was on NBC, and he said, look, you know, we still believe he is the man for the job and the person to get this aircraft back in the air. But until he does so, I mean, that said, he's still drawing a salary. It is more than we make in several years, so
yes,
it's fine.
It's hard to feel too much sympathy for them, but I get it. I mean, especially if you're a man and you expect it. It's like if you get a bonus every year.
Did you say if you're a man?
Manager.
Oh, I was like, if you're a man.
Did I say just
what?
If I were a man?
Especially if you're a man. What?
Oh, boy, I sure hope I didn't say that. Let's re-roll the tape on that one. Whoa.
Oh, man.
See, that's why I need you in here, Amy, to keep me in line.
Especially if you're a man. You could get away with this if you're a woman, folk. Hashtag things John Hansen never says. Anyway.
Yes, I am woke, Amy. You know this.
I know you are.
Let's talk.
You are.
Let's talk pizza, okay?
Let's switch. Let's get away from this whole thing.
Crumple up this sheet of paper and throw it away. Pizza, the Impossible Burgers taking over the fast food world. On our pizzas now, too?
That's right. We've actually been talking about this as connected to a lot of different business stories, because everybody's kind of waiting to see who is going to be the client that McDonald's chooses for their meat-based or their plant-based meat alternative. And so Giordano's and Protein Bar, to make this story a little more local, they have just announced this week they will have meat-free options. There is a sausage option a non-sausage, I guess, option at Giordano's starting this week. And that will be at all locations. Mm-hmm. And then Protein Bar, they do different things at different restaurants. Like some are the ones like the Test Kitchen and one's the limited menu. So mm-hmm. It won't be at all of theirs, but at some of them, they will have it for a limited time until about January. Just kind of see how it does. And they'll have a chili and a couple of other things, okay. Like a meatball. So,
have you tried it yet or no?
I have not.
I haven't either, and I know I should. I know it's not that bad, and people say it's really good. It's not much more healthy for you, by the way, people. It's still fatty, and it's like meat. But you know, if you've
got like gluten or wheat issues, you're a right. whole other ball of wax.
Yeah, that's
for you.
A whole other yeah. thing. But if that's something you believe in or want to try, that's cool. I feel like a pizza is a really great starter to
yes.
try it because there's so many other things covering it up, anyways. You know,
that's right.
You know, I mean, I know a burger, you got the bun and the cheese, but you know, the meat's still the main player.
And
but
like, even if pizza's not good, it's still pretty good.
Yeah,
you know,
right. Even the worst dorm pizza you're having the next day or whatever it might be turns out okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how people react to it. I'm going to start looking at social media to see what people do. I think this is a really interesting topic, you know, especially in the chicken space. Like Tyson was backing Beyond Meat. You know, they were involved there and then got out at the last minute before the IPO to go do their own thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's a business piece of all of this. And, you know, we saw this with fast food and you know, Burger King's kind of led that space with the Impossible Whopper. Even mm-hmm. though every time I walk by a Burger King, I often walk by the one in the Thompson Center mm-hmm. going to like public transportation, and I often see there's like a handwritten sign that's like out of Impossible Whoppers.
So they're like, don't even come in here.
Yeah,
wow.
Don't even ask. So we'll
see. Crazy. Impossible Burgers. Good for a man. Sorry, Amy. Thanks for joining us.
I'll just have a delicate ladylike tea sandwich.
We'll wrap things up after this on 720 WGN.